are living in an artificially induced state of consciousness that resembles sleep. The poor and the underclass are growing. Racial justice and human rights are non-existent. We have been lulled into a trance. They have made us indifferent to ourselves, to others. We are focused only on our own gain. That is their primary method of survival. Keep us asleep, keep us selfish, keep us sedated.
You're listening to Toward Anarchy on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Here's your host, Michael Storm.
All right, we are off into hour number two. Go to towardanarchy.com to follow along. Look for September 18th. You'll see I'm talking about the Constitution. This is that fantastic fable known as constitutional governance that somehow magically managed to leave us where we are today in this dystopian police state disguised as a voluntary participatory democracy. That's my flowery way of saying we got screwed and the Constitution didn't do anything to stop it. If not completely enabled it. And of course, that is the premise of the Constitution of no authority, which to which there is a link there at towardanarchy.com when you look for September 18th. And so I'll finish reading through this, and it won't take but just a couple of more minutes, just so that you can say you've heard Lysander Spooner's argument that the Constitution has no authority, and you won't have ever had to have gone and read it yourself. So basically, he said at this point that it's not a contract, and even if it was, it only binds the people who were actually a party to it, and that's correct. Except the only problem with it even being a contract at all is that it's a one-party document. There's no other party involved in the document. There's, first of all, government in and of itself is a fiction, so it can't be represented by someone in its establishment. That can't possibly happen. It can already be established and then be represented, but it can't be unestablished and be represented at the same time. So there's no possible way for the Constitution to represent a two-party document. It's a one-party document, and it's created by those people who created it at the time. And that's his core argument here, is that it doesn't bind them. It doesn't even bind their children, their posterity. It only says, in effect, that their hopes and motives in adopting it were that it might prove useful to their posterity, as well as to themselves, by promoting their union, safety, tranquility, liberty, etc. Suppose an agreement were entered into in this form. We, the people of Boston, agree to maintain a fort on Governor's Island to protect ourselves and our posterity against invasion. This agreement, as an agreement, would clearly bind nobody but the people then existing. Secondly, it would assert no right, power, or disposition on their part, or their successor's part, you should add that, to compel their posterity to maintain such a fort. It would only indicate that the supposed welfare of their posterity was one of the motives that induced the original parties to enter into the agreement. When a man says he is building a house for himself and his posterity, he does not mean to be understood as saying that he has any thought of binding them, nor is it to be inferred that he is so foolish as to imagine that he has any right or power to bind them to live in it. So far as they are concerned, he only means to be understood as saying that his hopes and motives in building it are that they, or at least some of them, may find it for their happiness to live in it. When a man says he's planting a tree for himself and his posterity, he does not mean to be understood as saying, see what I mean by he repeats himself, he's just using the same example again. He does not mean to be understood as saying that he has any thought of compelling them, nor is it to be inferred that he is such a simpleton as to imagine that he has any right or power to compel them to eat the fruit. So far as they are concerned, he only means to say that his hopes and motives in planting the tree are that the fruit may be agreeable to them. So it was with those who originally adopted the Constitution. whatever may have been their personal intentions, the legal meaning of their language, so far as their posterity was concerned, simply was that their hopes and motives in entering into the agreement were that it might prove useful and acceptable to their posterity, that it might promote their union, safety, tranquility, and welfare, and that it might tend to secure to them the blessings of liberty. The language does not assert nor at all imply any right, power, or disposition on the part of the original parties to the agreement to compel their posterity to live under it. If they had intended to bind their posterity to live under it, they should have said that their objective was not to secure to them the blessings of liberty, but to make slaves of them. For if their posterity are bound to live under it, they are nothing less than the slaves of their foolish, tyrannical, and dead grandfathers. It cannot be said that the Constitution formed the people of the United States for all time into a corporation. It does not speak of the people as a corporation, but as individuals. Thank you for pointing that out. I really think that's important. I try to point that out myself. That when they talk about people, they're talking about individual people, and they're talking about people being the reality of the state, that the state doesn't exist without people. So thank you for that, Mr. Spooner. I appreciate that. I really do. A corporation does not describe itself as we, nor as people, nor as ourselves. And they do these days, but that's a whole different story. Nor does a corporation in any lingual language have any posterity. And this is all really arguable, especially today when you're talking about you can leave assets, a corporation, to your posterity. So I guess what he's trying to say really is that the company itself is not guaranteed to exist, and even if you do pass it on to your children, they're not held. He keeps repeating himself. They're not obliged to consider even making the corporation run, let alone binding themselves to it or letting the corporation survive at all. In any sense, it supposes itself to have and speaks of itself as having perpetual existence as a single individuality. Moreover, no body of men existing at any one time have the power to create or perpetual corporation. That's what he's arguing. That it's just pieces of paper shuffled around, and you can't really make it last forever, even though it could. A corporation can become practically perpetual only by the voluntary ascension of new members. So he's getting there. It's just the language that he uses and the sort of paths that he tries to get there sometimes. As the old ones die off, he says. But for this voluntary ascension of new members, the corporation necessarily dies with the death of those who originally composed it. Legally speaking, therefore, there is in the Constitution nothing that professes or attempts to bind the posterity of those who established it. If, then, those who established the Constitution had no power to bind and did not attempt to bind their posterity, the question arises whether their posterity have bound themselves. If they have done so, they can have done so in only one or both of these two ways, vis-a-vis by voting and paying taxes. Let us consider these two matters, voting and tax paying, separately. And first, of voting. All the voting that has ever taken place under the Constitution has been of such a kind that it not only did not pledge the whole people to support the Constitution, but it did not even pledge any one of them to do so, as the following considerations show. 1. In the very nature of things, the act of voting could bind nobody but the actual voters, but owning to the property qualifications required, it is probable that during the first 20 or 30 years under the Constitution, not more than 1/10, 15th, or perhaps 20th of the whole population, black, white, men, women, minors, were permitted to vote. Consequently, so far as voting was concerned, not more than 1/10, 15th, or 20th of those then existing could have incurred any obligation to support the Constitution. At the present time, 1869 was the present time, it is probable that not more than 1/6 of the whole population were permitted to vote. Consequently, so far as voting is concerned, the other 5/6 can have given no pledge that they will support the Constitution. Of the 1/6 that are permitted to vote, probably not more than 2/3, about 1/9 of the whole population, have usually voted. Many never vote at all. Many vote only once in 2, 3, 5, or 10 years in periods of great excitement. No one, by voting, can be said to pledge himself for any longer period than that for which he votes. If, for example, I vote for an officer who is to hold his office for only 1 year, I cannot be said to have thereby pledged myself to support the government beyond that term. Therefore, on the ground of actually voting, it probably cannot be said that more than 1/9 or 1/8 of the whole population are usually under any pledge. And then this is again at that time. So none of us would be in those terms and numbers. In recent years, this is since 1940, the number of voters in elections has usually fluctuated between 1/3 and 2/5 of the populace. Nice little note there. It cannot be said that by voting a man pledges himself to support the Constitution unless the act of voting be a perfectly voluntary one on his part. My argument, yes. Yet the act of voting cannot properly be called a voluntary one on the part of any very large number of those who do not vote. It is rather a measure of necessity of those who do vote. I'm sorry. It is rather a measure of necessity imposed upon them by others than one of their own choice. In truth, in the case of individuals, their actual voting is not to be taken as proof of consent, even for the time being. On the contrary, it is to be considered that without his consent, having even been asked, a man finds himself environed by a government that he cannot resist, a government that forces him to pay money, render service, and forego the exercise of many of his natural rights under peril of weighty punishments. He sees, too, that other men practice this tyranny over him by use of the ballot. He sees further that if he will but use the ballot himself, he has some chance of relieving himself from this tyranny of others by subjecting them to his own. In short, he finds himself, without his consent, so situated that if he uses the ballot, he may become a master. If he does not use it, he must become a slave. And he has no other alternative than these two. In self-defense, he attempts the former. His case is analogous to that of a man who has been forced to battle where he must either kill others or be killed himself, because to save his own life in a battle, a man takes the lives of his opponents. It is not to be inferred that a man is one of his own, that the battle is one of his own choosing. Yeah. Let me read that one sentence just again. Because to save his own life in a battle, a man takes the lives of his opponents. It is not to be inferred that the battle is one of his own choosing. Neither in contests with the ballot, which is a mere substitute for a bullet, because as his only chance of self-preservation, a man uses a ballot, it is to be inferred that the consent is one into which he voluntarily entered, that he voluntarily set up all his own natural rights as a stake against those of others, to be lost or won by the mere power of numbers. On the contrary, it is to be considered that in an exigency into which he had been forced by others, and in which no other means of self-defense offered, he, as a matter of necessity, used the only one that was left to him. But it's just really long ways of saying the same things that I've repeated over and over again, that voting is it's statistical BS. It's a nonsense, and that by the fact of those who do vote empowering others to legislate and to dictate over the rest of us, the entire notion is just, it confounds me. It's a very silly idea, but obviously for many, many years, people have thought the same thing about our so-called democracy. And that's the problem with it, is because it is a so-called democracy, that the facade of our participation in what is happening to us is so, it's a good one. It's a really great facade. The building looks awesome from the outside, has all these great slogans and pictures and flags and wavy little sparkly things and fireworks, and just everybody loves to see it. And then you open up the door and it's basically a poop show. That's the reality of it. And that's just saying it. That's not even taking into account an actual analysis of the true individual problems caused by every single individual access, every place that government touches, influences, changes, alters our reality, and does so under this myth of a binding existence to each other that those people couldn't create to the people that existed at their time, let alone to us 235 years ago. And the only reason that I would even suggest any of this to you, I started the conversation about this, is that you need to understand the world around you. There's a bunch of people out there that just take the idea of the Constitution, just take the idea of voting, democracy, of government, all of these ideas, they take them for granted. There's no thought, no real consideration given to what it means to participate in this system and what that system does to all of the people who don't participate, even the people who do participate, when it decides, when some small percentage of people get together and decide how the rest of us have to abide, instead of just doing as we do every single minute of every single day, just getting along together and making this thing work, generally speaking. Right? Doubtless the most miserable of men under the most oppressive government in the world, if allowed the ballot, would use it. If they could see any chance of thereby meliorating their condition, but it would not, therefore, be illegitimate inference that the government itself that crushes them was one which they had voluntarily set up or even consented to. Boy, that's a word I haven't used very many. Consented? Use that word all the time. Meliorating. I haven't used that word very many times at all ever in my life. I don't suppose most people ever have, in fact. Will it do that? It does. Where'd it go? I want to hear it, though. I've never tried this before. I'm on my computer. It wants to read the thing. I didn't know it did that anymore. I just wanted it to say the one word. Ameliorating. She reads it pretty well, the little computer does. I didn't know that it would do that. And see, I have all these computer things. And they keep adding more and more into our browsers and the things that we access the internet with. And I didn't know it would do that. That was kind of neat. It will read the whole page out loud. I know it translates them too. Of course, they've always done that. So let's see. Okay. The next sentence in here. Therefore, a man's voting under the Constitution of the United States is not to be taken as evidence that he ever freely assented to the Constitution, even for the time being. Consequently, we have no proof that any very large portion, even of the actual voters of the United States, ever really and voluntarily consented to the Constitution, even for the time being. Nor can we ever have such proof until every man is left perfectly free to consent or not, without thereby subjecting himself or his property to be disturbed or injured by others. I got to keep reading. I'm going to end up in the break here in a minute. As you can have no legal knowledge as to who votes from choice and who from the necessity thus forced upon them, we can have no legal knowledge as to any particular individual that he voted from choice, or consequently that by voting he consented or pledged himself to support the government. Legally speaking, therefore, the act of voting utterly fails to pledge anyone to support the government. It utterly fails to prove that the government rests upon the voluntary support of anybody. On general principles of law and reason, it cannot be said that the government has any voluntary supporters at all until it can show who its voluntary supporters are. We'll come back and I will finish reading the Constitution of No Authority here on Toward Anarchy. Oh.
please explain how Ultra Mega Extreme MAGA are terrorists? I'm Peter Serafine, and this is today's Liberty Minute. President Biden and Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas both keep pointing at the Make America Great Again crowd as domestic terrorists. Let's examine that idea. The MAGA people don't seem to be hiding. Many of them wear clearly identifiable clothing, like bright red hats. Most are open about their beliefs, both religious and political. As far as I can tell, the MAGA folk just want to make America a great nation again. They want our government to think about us, the American citizens, first. They want to pay fewer taxes, want to actually feel represented in D.C., and generally want the government out of our daily lives. So please, tell me again how Let's Go Brandon became the new Allahu Akbar. Find more news and commentary at liberty-lighthouse.com. Until tomorrow, Sivas Pashem, Parabellum.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, no child left behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing. Knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives?
I have another update on the fundraising situation. We can accept PayPal through the RBN site. You can mail in cash, check or money order made out to RBN. The postal address is 2251 Double Creek Drive, number 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. If you send in a check or money order, it needs to be made out to RBN, just the three letters, RBN. And if you have any questions, call 800-724-2719, extension 3. Feel free to call on in on this issue, and we'll try and get you squared away. The network thanks you.
You're listening to Toward Anarchy with Michael Storm.
I hear something saying.
Where don't you know?
That's the sound of the men working on the chain. Gang. That's the sound of the men working on the chain, gang.
All day long they're saying,
tells us that the Constitution has no authority and that voting is not an example of any voluntary commitment to support the government. And now he questions whether or not taxes are. The payment of taxes being compulsory, of course, furnishes no evidence that anyone voluntarily supports the Constitution. One, it is true that the theory of our Constitution is that all taxes are paid voluntarily, that our government is a mutual insurance company voluntarily entered into by the people with each other, that each man makes a free and purely voluntary contract with all others who are parties to the Constitution to pay so much money for so much protection, the same as he does with any other insurance company, and that he is just as free to not be protected and not to pay tax as he is to pay tax and to be protected. But this theory of our government is wholly different from the practical fact. The fact is that the government, like a highwayman, says to a man, your money or your life. And many, if not most, taxes are paid under the compulsion of that threat. The government does not indeed waylay a man in a lonely place, spring upon him from the roadside, and holding a pistol to his head, proceed to rifle his pockets. But the robbery is nonetheless a robbery on that account, and it is far more dastardly and shameful. The highwayman takes solely upon himself the responsibility, danger, and crime of his own act. He does not pretend that he has any rightful claim to your money or that he intends to use it for your benefit. He does not pretend to be anything but a robber. He has not acquired impudence enough to profess to be merely a protector, and that he takes men's money against their will merely to enable him to protect those infatuated travelers who feel perfectly able to protect themselves or do not appreciate his peculiar system of protection. He is too sensible a man to make such professions as these. Furthermore, having taken your money, he leaves you as you wish him to do. He does not persist in following you on the road against your will, assuming you to be rightful, sovereign, on account of the protection he affords you. He does not keep protecting you by commanding you to bow down and serve him, by requiring you to do this and forbidding you to do that, by robbing you of more money as often as he finds it for his interest or pleasure to do so, and by branding you as a rebel, a traitor, and an enemy to your country, and shooting you down without mercy if you dispute his authority or resist his demands. He is too much of a gentleman to be guilty of such impostures and insults and villainies as these. In short, he does not... he does not, in addition to robbing you, attempt to make you either his dupe or his slave. For this reason, whoever desires liberty should understand that these vital facts, vis-a-vis one, that every man put his money into the hands of government, so-called, puts it into the hands of a sword, which will be used against him to extort more money from him and also to keep him in subjection to its arbitrary will. Two, that those who will take his money without his consent in the first place will use it for his further robbery and enslavement if he presumes to resist their demands in the future. Three, that it is a perfect absurdity to suppose that any body of men who would ever take a man's money without his consent for any such object as they profess to take it for, that of protecting him, for example. For why should they wish to protect him if he does not wish them to do so? To suppose that they would do so is just as absurd as it would be to suppose that they would take his money without his consent for the purpose of buying food or clothing for him when he did not want it. If a man wants protection, he is competent to make his own legal bargains for it, and nobody has any occasion to rob him in order to protect him against his will. Five, that if only the only security men can have for their political liberty consists in their keeping their money in their own pockets until they have assurances perfectly satisfactory to themselves that it will be used as they wish it to be used for their benefit and not their injury. Six, that no government, so-called, can be reasonably trusted for a moment or reasonably supposed to have honest purposes in view any longer than it depends wholly upon voluntary support. These facts are also vital and so self-evident that it cannot reasonably be supposed that anyone will voluntarily pay money to a government for the purpose of securing its protection unless he first makes an explicit and purely voluntary contract with it for that purpose. It is perfectly evident, therefore, that neither such voting nor payment of taxes as actually takes place proves anybody's consent or obligation to support the Constitution. Consequently, we have no evidence at all that the Constitution is binding upon anybody or that anybody is under any contract or obligation whatever to support it. And nobody is under any obligation to support it. The Constitution not only binds nobody now, but it never did bind anybody. It never bound anybody because it was never agreed to by anybody in such a manner as to make it, on general principles of law and reason, binding upon him. But you can't, why would you, how dare anyone suggest that reason or actual natural law, when he's referring to, he's not talking about legalese, although in a sense he is, but that's the thin line between a natural law and paper law. There's because that's in adjudication of dispute. The questions have to be answered. They can't just be, well, it's a matter of natural law that you have to respect me. No, you have to prove a case. You have to show that you've been damaged, that your property has been damaged. I will come back and we'll finish it. We're almost done. There's not that much more to go. It is the Constitution of No Authority on Toward Anarchy.
The truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. While we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country, here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org. and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
This is Toward Anarchy on RBN with Michael Storm.
Lysander Spooner seems to think that they're the same thing. It sounds reasonable. There's a certain comparison there. So far, he's told us that there's no way that the Constitution can bind us, because the Constitution, well, it skips over the fact that the Constitution isn't a contract and gets right to, well, let's just assume it is a contract. He knows it's not a contract. It's obvious that it's not a contract, but he's going to tell you why, even if you believe that it is a contract, why there's no proof that that contract is valid or can be validated or revalidated through the process of voting or through the process of paying taxes, because none of those things are voluntary. There's a premise, an idea, a theory, he says in there, that these things are voluntary, but the truth is they're not. They're not voluntary. And the system itself is of this, just expounding on the entire concept of it, the reason why it doesn't work and the reason why you can't say, well, you can vote a little bit or vote harder or something like that, and make that successful. Oh, you got to get out and vote. You got to vote or die, whatever the slogan of the month is, that it's time to go out and vote. That doesn't change the fundamental nature of the system itself, and that realizing that if I can sit here and tell you this, that these other people can tell you this too, and that they don't, that there's no respect for, nobody cares about these dusty old documents and ideas that existed, except when they can use them as a, you know, it's the law of the land, right? So they can use them as a means of using the legal system, using their own unconstructed legal system, not the lawful system, to force you into a compliance. And that's the difference between that was what I was starting to talk about there, was that thin line between the law and then putting something on paper, natural law, and then putting something on paper. In natural law, it is completely, absolutely, 100% understood that we are all free people and that we cannot be bound, we cannot be made a slave without our own voluntary consent. We can't be bound to a contract, whether it's with government, whether it's with business, whether it's with a wife, whether it's with a business partner, whatever it is, that we can't be bound by a contract that we didn't sign, that we can't be held liable for the terms of a contract when we are not party to the contract. Rather than tell you that the Constitution is not a contract, which it clearly isn't, it doesn't meet the form or structure of a contract in any way, shape, or form, and that notion being extremely important, we get to the point, well, voting doesn't prove it, because voting is not authoritative. There is no, we don't all participate. We don't all willingly participate. We don't all participate for the very reason of voting. On that issue, we participate out of fear, out of hype, there's all these different reasons, and that it's just a small percentage of people who participate. So voting certainly by the smaller class of people is no legal proof that the rest of us need to be held, to be bound by this contract that they imagine that they have between themselves and their imagined protector government. And the act of paying taxes certainly isn't. I mean, we don't have to go into the act of paying taxes being voluntary at all, because you will get thrown in prison. You will have all of your life and livelihood confiscated and taken away from you if they decide that they want tax money from you and that you haven't paid them enough of it. That is just simply a fact. So there's nothing voluntary about paying taxes. There's nothing voluntary about voting. You think you're voting because you want to, because it's your choice, because you're free to do so, but you're voting out of respect for tradition. You're voting because you don't want to see the other guy win. You're voting because, well, there's some idea that, you know, your participation might actually change you. But when the truth is that the most you can be doing is agreeing at that moment to an individual or an idea, and that's not even binding beyond that moment, beyond that period in time, let alone to the person standing next to you who did or didn't vote. It doesn't matter. It makes no difference. He uses certain words that make me believe that he thinks the same way I do about it. The notion is completely absurd in the face of any logical sense of understanding what natural law means and what the law means and what the law on paper and the defense of the individual should mean and why natural laws exist. Are we at all confused about the concept of natural laws is not something that props up the state? I know that there is confusion about that. So let me restate that. I'm trying to tell you that when I speak of the law, I'm talking about the things that actually protect you from things like the state. Some beast, some animal, some individual, some group of persons who seem to think that they have the right, the power, whatever it is, through their self-constructed, self-enforced, self-aggrandized delusions of a small percentage of people saying, well, I guess it's okay if you guys steal some money from everybody and pool it all together and protect us. I'm doing the Nixon quotes thing. So that's where we stand. The Constitution, I'm going back to reading this thing here and we'll wrap this up. The Constitution not only binds nobody now, but it never did bind anybody. It never bound anybody because it was never agreed to by anybody in such a manner as to make it, on general principles of law and reason, binding upon himself. He didn't sign a contract. None of us signed a contract. And he goes into this here. It's a general principle of law and reason that a written instrument binds no one until he has signed it. The principle is so inflexible a one that even though a man is unable to write his name, he must still, quote, make his mark before he is bound by a written contract. This custom was established ages ago when few men could write their names, when a clerk, that is, a man who could write, was so rare and valuable a person that even if he were guilty of high crimes, he was entitled to pardon on the ground that the public could not afford to lose his services. Even at that time, a written contract must be signed, and men who could not write either made their mark or signed their contracts by stamping their seal upon wax affixed to the parchment on which their contracts were written. And you thought those rich royalty people were doing that because they're all smart and fancy and so, no, they're doing it because that's all they know. They're kind of dumb, too. Let's see. Hence the custom of affixing seals that has continued to this time. The law holds and reason declares that if a written instrument is not signed, the presumption must be that the party not be bound by it, did not choose to sign it or to bind himself by it, inasmuch as the Constitution was never signed nor agreed to by anybody as a contract, and therefore never bound anybody and is now binding upon nobody, and is moreover such an one as no people can ever hereafter be expected to consent to, except as they may be forced to do so at the point of the bayonet. It is perhaps of no importance that what is true legal meaning as a contract. Okay, here we go. It is perhaps of no importance what its true legal meaning as a contract is. That's what I was just saying, is that rather than tell you that the Constitution is not a contract, clearly not a contract, he goes through and he says, well, even if it is a contract, none of these things prove that the contract has been renewed or that it's been carried or that any of us is bound by it at all. Nevertheless, the writer thinks it proper to say that, in his opinion, the Constitution is no such instrument as it has generally been assumed to be, but that by false interpretations and naked usurpations, the government has been made in practice a very widely and almost wholly different thing from what the Constitution itself purports to authorize. He has heretofore written much and could write much more to prove that such is the truth, but whether the Constitution really be one thing or another, this much is certain, that it has either authorized such a government as we have had or has been powerless to prevent it. In either case, it is unfit to exist. And that's the wrap. That's it. That's the Constitution of no authority. It is the argument that the Constitution is not a contract, that even if you consider it a contract in the most loose sense of the word, in the most loose sense of the law, none of us signed it, none of us are bound to it, none of us have to follow it. And that includes the cities and their incorporations, all of this that falls underneath it. It's supposed to be voluntary. If you don't understand that now about your government, then you're missing a big point in understanding your government. If you believe that the government can act as it does and as it has, then you still do not understand even the founding of your government. Your government was not meant to be what it is today. Not by those who purported to have framed it. Not by those who said, we need this for our posterity. We need this for our protection. None of those things are realized by the document that is known as the Constitution. They are somewhat recognized and realized in the Bill of Rights, which is a separate document, and of course the Declaration of Independence being the more important of them, simply declaring that we are all free individuals and that if we do choose a government, we also choose to dismantle that government, and that the government isn't supposed to fight back. It's not supposed to be our prisoner. It's not supposed to be an institution. It's supposed to be much more an idea that we're all on the same side. And boy, it would be great if we could just accept that idea that we're all generally on the same side, and that is in terms of our existence. We all just want to exist. We all want to have our families and play our video games and watch our sports ball and do the things that we want to do, and we want to be left alone. We do not want to be robbed. We do not want it to be under any pretense of legality or tradition, or that if I would just participate, then I would have a say in it, because that's not what happens. And now what we're really getting at is that, okay, so this is 80 years after the Constitution. I put out a couple of different numbers at the beginning of the show when I was just sort of chatting about what it was that I thought I was going to do today. And if you go to towardanarchy.com, if you look for September 18th, you can see that there. We are celebrating the Constitution is 235 years old and about 162 years dead this week. And so, okay, that's the Civil War. But then I also did another one. There was another piece of math that I thought was great. This was when I shared it around in the social media. We're celebrating the Constitution 235 years old and 216 years dead. So we didn't even make it to the 19 years there. And that's because we didn't even make it the 20 Jefferson was talking about, I guess, in reorganizing, rewriting, redoing the Constitution every couple of decades or so. We didn't even make it that far before somebody came along and said that we no longer had standing as people. They changed the language. It was important in there. I was really impressed by that. Again, that's only the second time that I've ever read that document, and I've taken it in a lot more in analyzing it and talking with you about it right now than I ever did before when I read it. And the notion of the people as actual individuals, and that the state doesn't exist without people, the 11th Amendment changed the relationship between people and government because it made the people into citizens. So therefore, instead of being government being what the people create and take down and destroy if they must, as their natural right to do so, things were flipped around. And the government created the individual. So the government now is the thing that exists. It is that system. It's that beast. It's that Leviathan that is hanging over all of our shoulders that you can't ever get past. And it begins at that 11th. I mean, there are different points all throughout history that you can argue, but this is in writing, and it's in the most important place in writing and the understanding of what the Bill of Rights is in relation to the Constitution and what the following amendments are in relation to individuals. You were made, the government put itself before the people and made you into citizens, and that's what destroyed it. In one argument. I will come back and we'll wrap it up here on Ward Anarchy.
Extendivite really works. Here's just a few testimonials from Amazon. RL, 5 stars. Been taking this for 2 months now. I feel better. Have more energy. April, my husband started taking Extendivite, and he said he feels much better and has more energy. EW, need to try. Everyone needs this for their health. Great product, great people. Josie, it works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it. JC, great product. Has worked well these last few years. To get your Extendivite today, go to extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Hello, I'm Peter Serafine, and I'm the new host of National Intel Report on Thursdays here on Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm a gun-owning constitutionalist who believes that the only role of government is to protect my rights. I believe the First Amendment makes us free, and the Second Amendment keeps us free. If those ideas sound good to you, then join me in the National Intel Report, Thursdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Republic Broadcasting Network.
Hey, do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the ones in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, or fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you'll see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Check us out at SusannahSecret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S, Secret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S, Secret.com.
Hi, Tom Bolton for Ease Off. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight 4 of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
You're listening to Toward Anarchy with Michael Storm.
Let's go!
that are legal and the legal historians, they understand these things, and they're going to argue with me about the 11th Amendment thing. But I think I can prove my case. And of course, it's the 13th and 14th Amendments that officially make people citizens of the United States. However, the important thing is that we couldn't have got there if it wasn't for the 11th Amendment. The 11th Amendment, of course, is about the federal government being able to adjudicate claims by individuals against the state if they don't live in the state. It's a long, convoluted, just a bunch of but the point is that this had to come up because what the language of the amendment, it changes. If you read the Bill of Rights, and we just read Spooner, and we have an understanding that even he understood back then, just 80 years after this was done, that people were individuals, that they weren't speaking about this a weird thing that you can't quantify, that we're talking about all the people that make up a state, that make up a place, that make up a government, that make up a city, all of these people. None of these other things exist without the people. And if you read the Bill of Rights, is people's amendments. It's an attempt to express the natural rights that people have, particularly and they need to retain, particularly in the face of authority. They are saying that you have all people, not citizens, not constructs of the state, not people who have been given permission by the state, people, all people have the right to speak out against their government. All people have the right to defend themselves from their government. All people have the right to have their possessions and their properties and the papers, the things they write and they create, the point of that being protected from the state, because the state is nothing more than, this is what they recognize, and this is what isn't understood today, that the state is nothing more than an organization of gangsters when it comes down to it. It can be this lofty ideal of protection and equality for everyone, but the truth is that it is by nature the opposite of that. That it is protection and equality for the individuals who create it and maintain it. And the lie is that people who vote in it create it and maintain it. That's not true. That's not true at all. At most, it led a tacit agreement to that small group of people who created the thing, the idea, the law, whatever it is, put up a person. So that's it. There's no authority in the Constitution. Never had it, never did. Just like 7-Up never had that the caffeine, right? we'll be back next week. Until then, take care.
Tune in Saturday mornings, 8 to 10 Central, to the Alternative Media with your host, Farron. If you've not been listening, this is some of what you've been missing.
2,000 mules, like you like to say occasionally, Farron, in your face.
They might have a set of lactating mammaries available that could provide milk for their adopted children.
Complicit news media, all pulling off this gigantic fraud.
Rhino, neocon, cucks.
There's this wonderful thing that's called Vote With Your Feet. Move to California.
I am a conspiracy factualist, and everyone else is a reality theorist.
Hundreds, if not thousands, of ships came out of nowhere.
Give me liberty, or let's give you death.
any excuse to go and kill yourself for this fraud of a government. This goes back 100 years.
When they come for your gold, give them a lead. And when they come for your guns, give them the bullets first. And God help us all.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.